Welcome to Build Repeat, a Paces podcast. Hello, today we're speaking with Corey Hinden, Senior Director of Business Development at AC Power. Welcome to the podcast, Corey.
How's it going, James? Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. To start, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up at AC Power?
Sure. Yeah, I've been in the solar industry for pretty much my entire career. I knew I always wanted to get into renewable energy ever since I was in high school, really. I was very interested in the environment and the transition to renewables. I, for years, was trying to find a way into the renewable energy space. And I think a lot happened really in like the 2010s. First, I was kind of looking at biofuel companies and just kind of following how the industry was unfolding. But I knew I wanted to get into renewables and work on the business side of things, and ended up finding the commercial solar industry. I think it was a very good fit for what I was trying to do. There is opportunity to do business-related functions within that. And I ended up at a company called Enter Solar, which was a commercial solar company based in New York City, which is where I wanted to work. And it was a really great group of folks that, you know, taught me a lot about the industry. Since then, I went to David Energy for 2 years, which is a great kind of innovative tech mixed with energy supply company. And I think that's how I met you, actually. I saw some of the folks from David Energy. I think James McGinnis posted a link to Paces. And at that point, I was at AC Power. I wanted to get back into the solar development space, but saw that and kind of saw the work that you do. And I thought partnership with Paces would be a really good fit for AC Power. So since David Energy, I ended up just going back into the solar development space and found AC Power, which really aligns with what I want to do. AC Power is a mission-driven company focused exclusively on developing solar energy on landfills and brownfields, any kind of previously disturbed land, new quarries, abandoned coal mines, really, you name it. But that mission really attracted me and wanted to get into a more unique space within the solar development realm.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And thank you for your kind words about us and Paces. But it sounds like you had a very kind of thoughtful approach to your career coming. You started thinking about this in high school, and then you made these very specific steps. And I think that's somewhat rare in the industry. I'm sure there's a lot of oil and gas folks who kind of move into renewables. People come maybe from more of the engineering side. Yeah, and of course, you have people who have been in solar for their entire career as well. But I guess if you're thinking back to like the 2010s and the early 2010s, you know, solar wasn't what it is today, right? It wasn't even what it was today 2 years ago, right? And so I guess, how were you kind of thinking through what and your kind of thought process for why this was going to have such a large impact relative to maybe some of the other kind of directions you could have gone?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm fortunately kind of seeing more folks trying to get into the space. Obviously, climate has really taken off over the past decade. So I think there are a lot more resources for younger folks around the age I was when I wanted to get into the industry, who they're more kind of concrete, drawn out steps they could take, which is great. I think at the time there was no kind of major in college when, you know, I was in undergrad. There was no major kind of geared towards renewable energy, really. I actually kind of had to patchwork make my own field of study to help me learn the skills that would prepare me for renewable energy. But I'm now fortunately seeing full-on programs at most major universities that could prepare folks in undergrad for career in renewables. So I think it was really just kind of, at the time, the best I could do was read a lot about the industry and figure out where things were headed. And I attended conferences and just tried my best to kind of network with people who were related to the industry. So I really have tried since then to almost like pay it forward. And anytime I meet a high school or college age student, looking to get into the industry, I try to be as much of a resource as I can. I think it's one of the benefits of the industry is that people are always kind of willing to help. And I think a lot of the people in our generation, at least in the industry, have all been through a similar type of thing, especially people who started around the early mid 2010s. And I think it's a great part about the industry. It's a very tight-knit kind of insular community where we are willing to help out others and kind of get more folks involved.
And then when you get on the conference circuit, you see a lot of friendly faces as we bounce around to all the different conferences around the country.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so going back then to, you know, Intersolar, when you join Intersolar, often there is a gap, right, between the expectations of moving into an industry for the first time, sometimes that, and reality. And sometimes that reality is even more exciting and impressive than what you're expecting. And sometimes there's a gap on the other direction. Was there anything surprising when you actually were in the nitty gritty of working at a solar focused company relative to your previous expectations?
That's a good question. I think what surprised me is that I tried to like prepare myself for that kind of role more than I actually needed to. Realistically, I think as someone who's on the other side of things now and hiring people out of college and folks that are interested in renewables, I think, you know, you can teach people the skills on the job to like analyze solar projects from an economic standpoint, the type of stuff that we do on the business development side. But you can't really teach people like a passion for renewables and a passion in the industry. So I think what I generally look for is just like a strong interest and passion for the work. And I think that that is what will make someone good at business development. Definitely like a core belief in what they're doing. And I think once they build out the skills to run a financial analysis of a site or kind of dive into the policy of any given state or federal or what have you, that kind of all stems from an interest in learning and growing and being able to develop skills. So I think what surprised me was people's really like understanding that, at least at Intersolar, there was a great culture where they understood that we came in not knowing a ton about the industry, and they prepared us to kind of grow in understanding economics and business development and all of the skills that we needed to be able to have a holistic view of our market. And that's the same kind of culture that we have at AC Power now.
You mentioned a little bit about the types of aspects of what business development means. And in different industries, business development has a lot of different definitions depending on the type of business that's being developed. Can you speak to like your role, like the kinds of things you do day to day?
Sure. So at AC Power, we view business development as everything up from deciding which markets we even want to evaluate up through putting an agreement together with a landowner to formally run due diligence on the project and spend capital to investigate its potential for solar. So there's a lot of things in between. And the business development team that we have folks on the back end who can look at sites, evaluate exactly, almost like run preliminary screenings of sites to determine based on like free to use materials, how much solar we could even fit on the site. They run financial models to, you know, see if a project's going to pencil. And a lot of the time they're looking at each state level market and each utility to kind of find a suitable structure for the project. So every project we work on is pretty different from each other and requires kind of a unique approach. So there's basically creativity in structuring a project that our analysts and my team are doing on the back end. And then on the front end, it is kind of getting boots on the ground and meeting with these landowners and the folks who own previously disturbed sites are really unique people. You know, you have everything from kind of family-owned landfills, people just in the waste space who independently own these properties, and they're really interesting people and really cool to talk to, up through some of the major waste firms in the country and kind of all the partners that help us find these sites. So it requires kind of a interest in people, I think, on the front end. You meet some characters here, and yeah, I think those are the main skills that we're using on our side.
And if you think about the brownfield development approach compared to what a lot of folks might be more familiar with, which is greenfield development of solar, how do they compare from like the pros and cons of each approach?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think developing greenfields is just, there's a lot less kind of downside associated with making a mistake on a project, basically. You know, brownfields, a lot of our sites are regulated by, you know, like a state or a federal entity, and, you know, like the EPA or the state level version of the EPA. And there are some serious issues that could happen if you disturb the site during solar development. So, for example, when we're developing a landfill or a brownfield, and if it's capped with hazardous material beneath, we need to design a solar project fully with the idea of preserving the cap fully in mind. So you can't drive any poles into the ground, anything like that. We use ballasted racking, and there's a ton of additional engineering required to design a system that preserves the cap. And with the idea of, there are a lot of restrictions that you need to be aware of too. We're in the space, and we have a lot of folks on our team who have backgrounds in environmental remediation, and they can get comfortable with these types of things, but getting kind of a standard owner and operator of solar who mostly has kind of, maybe they own rooftop solar assets or greenfield solar assets, getting them comfortable with owning a site or owning a solar project on a previously disturbed site is that requires a lot more work. And it's something that's kind of emerging now as part of the IRA. It's something that our country has demonstrated a commitment to growing, and it's a field that's going to be growing, but you need to do a lot of extra work to get all of the parties involved comfortable with siting a solar project on these types of properties.
Yeah, I'd imagine with the Inflation Reduction Act passing, and there are so many elements that do refer to brownfields, and so there's a lot of, you know, tax credits and upside to developing a brownfield. So there's now, I'd imagine, quite a bit more competition. And so, but you mentioned that one of your core pieces of differentiation is actually being able to understand what is and is not possible, and mitigating the risks that you mentioned. How difficult is that to explain to the owner? Because I'm sure a lot of the owners of these different brownfields are getting a ton of interest from like a lot of different interested parties. And, you know, they may not be experts in renewable development and not really maybe always have the ability to differentiate between folks like yourself who have a huge amount of experience in the space, and then other folks who are like, okay, you know, maybe they look at the tax credit first, but maybe don't have the in-house expertise to actually get a project to NTP and beyond.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like I said before, our team is made up of, we have solar folks on the team, which I consider myself one of the solar folks on the team, but we do have, I would say about half our company is from the environmental remediation space originally, and they're truly experts in that field. So when they're meeting people who work in the waste industry or in another kind of industry that produces brownfields, the people on our team speak the language. And I think the people on the other side could tell right away that they know what they're doing, and they have their interests in mind. So I think that's really important if you're looking to develop brownfield projects. And we, up until probably the last year with the IRA, we've had only really a few firms nationwide who do similar work to what we do, and they were all built up the same way, and they're both competitors and allies in what we do. You know, we have good relationships with those companies. We advocate for the same things, and you know, we know that they're doing great work as well. But I would almost like caution other companies who are looking to get into the space that it takes a lot of know-how, and you really want a very experienced team to be doing these types of projects. So I know there's going to be a lot more competition in the space, but I really hope that people are going about it in a responsible way, because it affects the reputation of all developers who are doing solar on brownfields.
And we talked a little bit about the carrots of some of those incentives. Then you have the regulatory framework for how to actually manage that this transition from a landfill or a brownfield into a solar project. What does the regulatory landscape look like? There's obviously federal rules. You have a lot of state level rules. Sometimes I'm sure municipalities have their own additional rules. And where is the kind of balance right? And where could things be improved from a regulatory approach, right? Because if it's infinitely restrictive, nothing ever gets changed. And it's completely permissive, you might have some of those downstream negative effects that you mentioned earlier. And so, yeah, how do you think about that regulatory balance?
Sure. Yeah. I think from an environmental regulation standpoint, I think the level of regulation is pretty strong, especially in the states that we're working in. You know, like New York State has a very built out kind of EPA equivalent, the DEC. I think naturally we tend to work in states that are supportive of solar development tend to be states that prioritize environmental protection. So generally, just by following the guidelines and working with those departments and gaining the approvals we need to do, it gets the investors and the projects comfortable with owning them. I frankly have yet to develop projects in states with very kind of loose permitting requirements, for lack of a better word, but I think it is going to be important for investors to kind of follow similar restrictions that you would have in like New York or New Jersey or states with these built out environmental protection regulations. But I think on the energy side, one of the things that benefits development in a lot of states is having some kind of regulation that allows for remote offtake. That's actually one of the things that we are really advocating for. The IRA is like one of the most consequential federal bills that we've ever seen, and is going to spur kind of investment in renewables to a scale. It's going to completely supercharge everything. But there are states where, I'm not going to name names, but maybe the entire state is pretty much an energy community, and the entire state is eligible for like a 10% additional ITC adder. But there's no way to really develop projects at these sites because the sites are typically not located next to a source of energy use. You can't do a behind the meter project. And there's no way to really sell energy at a competitive rate. So we're looking for states that have community solar and other types of remote offtake structures, maybe virtual net metering, something like that. But the ability to build projects with remote offtake attracts investors. You're able to make economics pencil. And by pairing that with these brownfield sites that maybe have long-term environmental O&M requirements, we can offset some of those things, or maybe even remediate an entire site and pair it with solar. So we think like the ability to have some kind of virtual offtake can help us scale our business model, remediate some of these hazardous properties. And we think the pairing of the revenues you get from solar and the O&M costs of maintaining one of these sites is pretty strong natural pairing, and it's almost like the backbone for our business model.
And I guess like kind of looking ahead, what are some of the kind of goals you're trying to hit at AC Power over the next couple of years?
Our goal, so our founder, Annika Colston, she has background really in landfill gas to energy and other environmental related things prior to that. She's well connected in the waste industry. I have to shout her out here because we haven't yet, but she's really kind of the visionary behind what we do. But her main goal as of right now is to obtain 1.21 gigawatts of energy within the next few years. So that's a back to the future reference, but I think also a strong kind of numerical goal that we're trying to hit. But we are really looking to be the leader in the space of solar on brownfield, solar on previously disturbed sites. And we're trying to be an advocate for the rest of the industry and show folks the best way to develop these types of projects.
Love that. 1.21 gigawatts and then eventually 420 gigawatts, right? Have all the various fun numbers. Absolutely brilliant talking to you today, Corey. Before we finish off, is there anything I should have asked you about but did not?
I think you could have plugged Paces a little bit. I'd be happy to toot your horn. I think you've been a really strong partner for us, and you know, anything you want to ask us about your product would be, I'd be happy to kind of answer that.
Yeah, no, very appreciated. Yeah, I think just mentioning that we've been great partners. I think you guys were one of our first four or five customers and have been an incredible source of like inspiration for how we've developed the product. But no, just it's very appreciated the kind words you said. And yeah, and so folks who, if they are interested in finding out more about Paces, they can always see the contact details to chat to me in the show notes. But yeah, really appreciate that plug and happy to continue working with you guys.
Likewise.
Thank you, Corey.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care, James.
Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, we'd love a 5-star rating. Thank you so much.